dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Matt Combs.
Hello, SBC fans, and welcome back to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk podcast show. This is show number 3 here in season 2, and I'm Shane Combs of SBCSportsZone.com, and be joined in just a second by my brother Matt. But first, I guess I was a little overwhelmed. All the discussion with volunteers and teachers a week ago, and this all started with an email last week. And fans, if you missed that, and you're not sure what we're talking about, you can always go to the DBK Media Service website, which is the website that you're on right now listening to the show, and you can look back to last week's show. It was probably in the first 5 to 10 minutes, and just a lot of discussion on an article that I had written back late summer, early fall, and it's really stirred up some conversation. And, you know, some of the emails on topic, off topic, and in a way it's developed a whole new topic. And I guess, Matt, we didn't really plan on talking about this too much, But it filled up so much conversation with the inbox and Facebook and Twitter, and we always try to let the fans generate a lot of our show topics. So I thought we would take a look. One email this week says, in listening to last week's show, I felt the email was a bit over the top, but it wasn't all that off in terms of the message. Teachers do try to paint themselves as the victims in today's educational and political topics. I have friends who teach at Uniota, and I remember them complaining at the fair about starting school the next week. I just laughed at them and reminded them that every job in the world had to return next week as well. So, yeah, Matt, as I welcome you into the show, I guess now that you've had a week to step away and look at some of the different feedback in this particular email, what's your overall topic to the I guess your response to the topic as well as this particular email?
Well, in this particular email, I mean, every profession has people that complain about something, you know. When we go back to school, it's never really mattered to me. I think most teachers, you know, they don't really get too worked up over it. You're always going to have a few. I don't know that that's an educational or political topic, like this emailer started off by saying. I think that's a whole other issue that I think teachers are in some ways victims in those areas sometimes. But I think if we get into talking too much about this, we become more of a political talk show rather than a sports talk show, which we're supposed to be. So probably just leave it at that. But it's interesting to see how many people are passionate about this topic.
Well, it is. I know as we start to get more into the sports topic, there was an email that was a little bit more on topic of what the article was meant for. And then their question kind of takes us down a sports avenue. It says, after listening to this week's show, meaning last week's show, I went to the website and found the article on volunteers. And again, fans, if you're not sure what they're talking about, just look at the homepage, SBCSportsZone.com. During all this discussion, I've tried to keep that headline down at the bottom. You'll see it's about the generosity of the volunteers and the time they put in. It says, I do agree that it takes a lot of volunteers and it takes a lot of effort in terms of time and money. It goes on to say, what I didn't follow is how it puts more pressure on the head coach and his or her programs. Can you explain that to me a little better? I guess what I was coming across there is at the small schools, what's really happened is your paid assistants are gone in a lot of cases. More and more of the assistant, especially at the varsity level, are being cut. And it's really putting a strain. A lot of times JV numbers are down, so teams that don't have a JV coach, they don't really get that paid position either. So a lot of these smaller schools, your head coach is the only paid coach in the entire program, unless you coach a sport that has junior high in that particular sport. So when you consider time, practice, fundraisers, concession workers for the boosters, and all that specialty type of work, be it a quarterback coach in football or having that extra guy in basketball or having a pitching coach in baseball, those are the types of things that really hurt. And Matt, I wanted to throw it back to you here. I know that you've gotten into some AD work and you've obviously coached multiple sports. What would be your response in terms of how not having volunteers around, or especially paid assistants around, how would you describe to this emailer how that could hurt a program?
Well, it's really simple. I mean, it takes a lot of people really to run a program the right way. You know, if you look at some of the most successful programs, whatever sport it be, especially say a football, I suppose basketball, you know, football especially though comes to mind, because you really have to have such a big coaching staff, you know, to begin with. And the best programs have those volunteers, those people that are just putting that time and effort in for you to do some of the little things that maybe otherwise wouldn't get done. And if you don't have those people, you know, then you just can't do some of the creative things you'd like to do as a coach and to make your program great. I mean, a lot of the great programs, you know, over the years, I'm trying to come up with an example off the top of my head from the SVC, maybe Southeastern basketball, Larry, Coach Jordan, you know, he always had those guys that were there, you know, keeping his stats, you know, helping him practice, whatever the case may be. I'm not sure those guys always got paid. I'm assuming a lot of those guys are volunteers. You know, you go watch a Jackson football or Ironton football, I guarantee you not every guy standing on that sideline is paid. You know, and so what puts the pressure on you as a coach is if all of a sudden you can't, you know, you're trying to get people to help you and give of themselves and their time. And then you say, oh, by the way, sorry to tell you, you got to drop a couple $100 here before we even get started, you know, to do all these things. I think that's what the article you originally wrote was intended to talk about.
Right.
And it's kind of spawned some of these other conversations. But really, when you narrow it in, it's we've got to have these people that are willing to help. And it's awfully difficult to ask them to help when they have to put money out of their own pocket.
Well, Matt, I'm glad that you put it that way, because that's where I guess I wish this conversation would go. As passionate as people seem about the article and the overall teaching thing and the volunteer thing, I would love to hear from some of our outside listeners. I know our email's admin1@svcsportszone.com. This has been awfully big on Facebook as well. You can go to Facebook a couple different ways. You can like us for the svcsportszone.com page. And then I also have an SVC Sports Zone Shane Combs page. And then SVC Sports Zone's on Twitter as well. And I would love to hear from some of our outside people in SEO Preps, JJ Huddle, just in terms of their opinion on this at a big school compared to a small school, and some of the things that that conversation might generate there. I know, just to sum up a few more, we're not going to spend too much more time on it, but to sum up a few more things, I know they talked about how rules could possibly help coaches keep parents or different people away. My response to that would be sometimes that can be good and bad. You know, you need parent involvement to be successful, especially at the small school. A couple people had some funny ones that basically disagreed with the email last week in terms of one calling it ignorant. And then there were some nice ones that were thanking the volunteers. And I guess really that's the key to the whole conversation. I love the exposure for the podcast, and we love all the feedback we're getting for the show. But the bottom line, the article was meant to bring attention to the generosity of our volunteers for all that they do to help our student athletes.
Can you blow my whistle, baby, let me know. Girl, I'm gonna show you how to do it, and we start real slow. You just put your lips together. Can you blow my whistle, baby? Whistle, baby.
Matt, if we get into talking sports this week, what better way to start than to talk a little SVC football? Week four, we all know, marks the start of SVC play. And when I check out the Embroid Me schedule for week four, and again, fans, Embroid Me at Chillicothe, out on Bridge Street, a new location, if you're not aware, that 10 Health Drive. You turn there like you're going to Lowe's, and it's out there on the right. Real nice new location. Again, that's 774-7400 for all your apparel needs. You can even print a coupon online to get 10% off your next trip. But Matt, as I check out the week four schedule, some great, great matchups. I think we're going to have some really close finishes, some games getting into the fourth quarter. And what better place to start our discussion than looking at what a lot of people are calling showdown Westfall at Piketon. And when you look at these two schools, you can't help but think offense. Trent Williamson there at Westfall with his weapons, Staten and Klein and Thomas, and Isaac Brapson on the other side for Piketon, Ferguson and William. I know, Matt, you saw them play earlier in the year. You really liked their athleticism, and the running backs, Royster and Waddell, and even defense. I think sometimes you have to be careful judging defenses, especially like a Westfall when they play Taze Valley, Logan Elm, Circleville in the first 3 weeks. I really think as we get into this situation, I was looking back last year, Piketon up at Westfall leads that 38-28 in the second half when I look back at our CNK archives, and Trent Williamson, I believe, had like 180 on the ground and through the air. And I really think it's going to be key to try to make both of these quarterbacks one-dimensional, because they can beat you with both their running ability and their throwing ability. Matt, we'll get into predicting later in our two-minute drill, but for now, as you take a look at the week four schedule, and in particular this Westfall Piketon game, what jumps out at you as something you want to be paying attention to in week four?
Well, in terms of this, you know, Westfall Piketon game, I think it's going to be a fun game. You're talking two pretty good offenses. I heard Coach Keller and Coach Gallion, and I happened to catch them last week on the scoreboard show that WKKJ does. Coach Keller was talking about how in high school football right now, you know, the open field tackling is so difficult for high school kids sometimes to do. And that's why when you can put yourselves in one-on-one matchups that, you know, you can create some advantages for yourselves. And I think I've seen Piketon play, and I know what Westfall tries to do. I think both of those teams try to do that a lot, get guys in space, you know, short, crisp passing games at times. So you're going to see a lot of, I think it's going to be a fun game to watch, you know, with those two teams. So, I mean, that's definitely the game of the week, the one that everybody will be paying attention to. But as we'll talk about later in our two-minute drill, I think there's some other games that could be real competitive as well.
No question about it. I know the Paint Valley Zane Trace game is one that people are intrigued by. And when you start thinking of Paint Valley, you think of undefeated going into league play. But what's so unique about that is they're 2-0. And you ask yourself, why is that? Well, the situation Friday night, Paint Valley tied 7-7 just before halftime at Cedarville, and the Lightning situation just kept extending the time, and before you know it, they decided they're going to have to call the game, and it's not going to be made up. And I guess in the sport of football, this is just a really unique situation. And Matt, you're wearing the hat as an athletic director now. I know you probably ran into this situation as all sites that were hosting a home game the other night went through. I guess just what's your take on this? Give the fans some behind the scenes discussion from coaches and ADs, and it's obviously not the best situation, but it is what it is.
Well, you know what's interesting about Lightning, I don't know if all fans know the rule or not, but basically the OHSAA has come out with a rule that says anytime you see Lightning or even hear thunder, and that's where it gets tricky, okay? Even hear thunder, every time you hear it or see it, you start a clock over at 30 minutes. So imagine you see Lightning, you hear thunder, okay, we got 30-minute delay. 5 minutes into that delay, you see it again. Guess what? We jump back to 30 minutes. You see what I mean? Right. So it can last a long, long time because, I mean, anybody that, you know, knows anything about weather, obviously, you have a storm roll through. Even when you know it's past you and it's moved on, you still in the distance can hear the rumblings. You know, 30 more minutes, 30 more minutes, you know, I mean, and it puts a lot of pressure on. Oh, it definitely worries you as an AD, because I know the other night I'm sitting there thinking, you know, how do we handle this? I mean, if we end up getting canceled, do I got to give all these people their money back? Do we try to bring them on a different day and you know, just let that ticket be good for that day? I mean, because really when I say a different day, it's pretty much got to be the next day. You can't let it, you know, in football go into the next week when you have other games to play. Right. So it really, yeah, you're sitting there sweating it out a little bit, so to speak. And we were fortunate enough to get started about 8:30, which made for a late night, but at least we got it in. I know with the Paint Valley situation, they didn't get it in. And I haven't heard, Shane, maybe you have. I mean, I guess the thing I don't understand about it, what made them not make the game up? Was there something interfering?
I honestly just think it came down to, like you said, scheduling situations. There was a lot of different things. I had a hearsay. I did not actually get to talk to Coach Holland today, but a lot of different things I was getting. There was some JV situations. There was some scheduling issues, some availability of some different kids. And then, like you said, you don't want to push it back to Monday night. You're starting SVC play. Schools have games every Friday night, obviously. So you start pushing it back to Monday or Tuesday. Then you turn around on Friday. It really becomes a scheduling issue. And football is a 10-week sport, and you have your set game. So it's not like in basketball or baseball, you look for a empty night later in the year and get it in. So it's an unfortunate situation. We'll talk a little bit more in the year about the playoff picture. It was my understanding that this won't necessarily affect Paint Valley in terms of the way you divide it by 9 instead of 10, and we'll get a little bit more technical on that later in the year. But it definitely is going to be different to see that high school team end in just 9 games.
Well, you know, Shane, as an AD, I would love to know that game was at Cedarville, right? The Paint Valley Cedarville game.
Yes.
I would love to know what they did with the money. Did they give it back?
I would say they were deep enough into it with it being that close to halftime.
Or they just kept it.
I would say no, but I don't know that right for sure. But I would say that they were probably deep enough into it to not have to mess with that situation. But okay. Again, I don't know. But I think it's definitely something that will be interesting to find out a little bit more about it. Like I said, with it just being our first day back to school, I did not have a chance to sit and talk to Coach Holland today. I definitely want to do that. And then I'm really intrigued to see, as we get into the playoff picture, in terms of computer points across our league, right, and things like that, how that's going to work. So now the one thing, Matt, in football this week, we kind of had the sport of soccer and football all come together a little bit. As fans who have really been following the show over the last couple weeks, they know the kicking game has been kind of a hot topic. And we had an interesting perspective. If you go to the DBK website, again, the one that you're listening to there, and you scroll down through and really look over the pages, you'll see a lot of neat features. One, you can subscribe to the show by simply putting your email in the box, and you'll get an email that comes to you. You'll simply accept it, and then you'll get a little reminder, so to speak, or a link every time we release a new show. Another great feature is the comment box right down there at the bottom. You can comment, and we can chat back and forth, and other fans can do the same. And we had that this week from Colin Hill of Uniota. Colin's a soccer player at Uniota, the undefeated Uniota Shermans still, I believe. And I believe Colin's leading that team in assist, I noticed on our soccer page on one of our media releases. But he says in a comment, we're talking about it, if you can kick a soccer ball, how easy of transition is it to kick a football? He says it's much easier to teach a soccer player to kick a football than it is a football player to kick a football. With the skill of kicking already in place, all you need from a soccer player is timing, accuracy, and composure. I've messed around with the football a few times, and the style is not different. Is not that much different from kicking a soccer ball. Given this, the transition for a good soccer player to become a good kicker may only take a month. And I just thought it was interesting to get a player's perspective. And Matt, I guess the one thing I wanted to ask you, I know going all the way back to the beginning of this, you were talking about the development of the kicker, and we agreed that that may not be as easy as it seems, but right. I think you were just talking about people being open-minded to really searching out there to all the options, and soccer type of players are one. What's your response to Colin there?
Well, I mean, it makes sense, and I never played soccer personally, so it's kind of, you know, weird for me to comment on it because I'm not sure, but I mean, I'll take his word for it. You know, and the funny thing about it is a lot of the schools over the past few years that I have seen have decent kicking, decent kickers or whatever in football are schools that also had soccer. You know, it'd be interesting to know, maybe one of our listeners know, I was up at the Ohio State game the other day and watched Drew Basil, who a lot of people know is Ohio State's place kicker, played at Chillicothe. I assume he played soccer at Chillicothe too. I'm not sure. It'd be interesting. Maybe somebody could tell us if he did. But, you know, Zane Trace, we're going to talk about this kid here in a little bit. He has a good kicker. Does Dylan Miles, I don't know if Southeastern
just started soccer. Dylan's an outstanding soccer.
Right. That's what I mean. So, you know, there's obviously something there because a lot of the schools that have soccer, I know down in our league, Alexander has always had a pretty good soccer program. They've always had a pretty good kicker. So there is some correlation there, obviously.
Well, Matt, it is kind of a good time to mention some soccer there. Uniota Boys and Zane Trace Girls have outstanding teams this year. Uniota Girls had a huge win just last Saturday night against Bishop Hartley. And so you want to check out the soccer page there by clicking the soccer ball on the front page, svcsportzone.com. Check all of that stuff out. But as we get back to kicking, you know, I know Dylan Miles, good soccer player. Drew Gavis, good soccer player at Uniota. They both have done some nice jobs kicking for Southeastern and Uniota, respectively. Ryan Wells, who was Athlete of the Week earlier this year. And I do want to mention Herbie Strange, State Farm Insurance, Athlete of the Week. And I know it's coming out a little later than in years past. The reasoning for that is a lot of people had talked in the past that they felt like the release on a Monday was not giving the weekend performance maybe a fair chance to be recognized in terms of emails. So by taking it in the Monday, Tuesday a little bit, getting all the votes counted up, and then releasing it Wednesday or Thursday, it's maybe has done that. And what we've done is if we have really good Tuesday night volleyball performances, we've kind of stretched them out to the next week. So I just wanted to clarify that for fans. You can send those into the inbox as well to vote for your athlete on the boys and girls side. But Matt, you mentioned earlier, I want to go back to Friday night in the kicking game. Zane Trace wins 17-12 at McLean, and Connor Smith kicks a 41-yard field goal, makes good on a couple extra points as well. And if you really look at the that particular game in terms of some extra points not being added on by McLean, and then maybe putting them in a position where a field goal would have tied it later instead of being down five, that's another example of where two pretty closely matched teams, the kicking game maybe ends up being a little bit of a difference there.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the first thing that came to my mind when I saw it the other night. You know, they win by 5 points. He scores 5 points. And the funny thing about it is McLean, who, you know, I think has got a pretty solid team. They've beat a couple SVC teams here early in the season. They don't even try to kick the extra point. If I understood it right from listening to Coach Peters, they don't even try to kick the extra point on the first touchdown. They go for two immediately. So they're up 6-0. They don't get it. And they didn't try to kick it the next time. So the fact that they didn't even try to kick it on the first touchdown tells me they don't have a whole lot of confidence in that part of their game, or they would have just kicked it and went up 7-0. It doesn't make any sense to go for two on the first one. So, you know, that's the whole difference in the game. Zane Trace scores. They kick the extra point. Then this kid knocks in a 41-yard field goal, which you don't see every day. I did see a 42-yarder myself this week, so it must have been going around a little bit. But you know, so he knocks that home, and then he kicks another extra point. And obviously Coach Peters must put a lot into that because on the radio he mentioned the snapper, the holder, and the kicker. So,
yes.
He scores 5 points, they win by 5 points. So I thought that was interesting when I heard that the other day.
Well, it was really interesting because I happen to be getting some really good updates. I appreciate people sending me updates to allow me to do the shouts on Shoutomatic. And again, you'll look for those links there on the front page of our website. It basically is me giving you a voice update right there on the internet for you to listen to on your phones. Tuesday, Thursday night volleyball, Friday night football. Even had some soccer shouts the other night. So I appreciate that. I understand it was a 36-yard attempt and there was a penalty. You move them back 5 yards. And again, as we've talked before, most coaches would have to go to a different route. He keeps him out there on the field and he knocks it in from 41. So outstanding special teams play there for the Pioneers. Another great email on this topic, Matt. It says the kicking game talk this year has been entertaining and informative, but I think the Combs brothers are being a little unfair to football coaches. Take a game you guys know better than most, like basketball. How mad would it make you if in a year where you guys had a bad point guard, if fans said, I can't believe Coach Combs doesn't value the point guard position? Just a thought. Enjoyed the show. Thanks. Well, I guess, Matt, I'll jump in here first and then let you respond. I guess I don't know. I guess I look at it as it's not the same thing. I don't know that we've ever meant to compare the kicker to the point guard. The kicker is a unique thing. To me, the quarterback point guard comparison would be more of a thing. So when I read that, in no way as a coach am I trying to be unfair to another coach. I just think we're talking about something that is a little bit different here than maybe the emailer is looking at it. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think the better way to say it would be, if you went to watch basketball and 75% of the teams you saw play had a bad point guard, then that would be a comparison, because that's what happens in football. I mean, 3 out of every 4 teams you see have a bad kicking game, it seems like. You know, so if 3 out of every 4 basketball teams that you watch play had a bad point guard, then you would have to start questioning, do coaches value the point guard position? You know, so I think that was my point. I wasn't trying to attack any one coach, obviously, because obviously there are some coaches that do a good job in this area. But there, you know, when I see the vast majority of high school football teams I see struggle in the kicking game, that's when I started to question. And, you know, in terms of how would I feel, you know, I mean, that just comes with the territory with your coach. You know, I mean, you're going to catch some heat, so, you know, you better get past that. But no, that was what I was, I guess, referring to.
Well, Matt, this actually led to another email that had come in so late in the week that I didn't want to just squeeze it in the show, because I almost felt like the email was worthy of almost an overall show topic. They were talking about, in all the talk of football, what are some of the things in all sports, instead of having just a kicking game discussion every week in football, what are some things that aren't so obvious but are so, so important in every sport, so unique? And I just thought this was an awesome topic. I would love for our fans to think of all sports, football, basketball, baseball, softball. I don't even care if we narrow it down to track and golf and everything. What are some of the overlooked fundamentals, stats, positions that maybe don't jump out at you, but are really, really crucial? In other words, we're not talking about the softball pitcher being important. That's obvious, and we know that. We're looking for a detailed fundamental or a stat or position that maybe doesn't quite jump out at people. Send those to us, admin1@svcsportzone.com or the Facebook or the Twitter. We're also going to have these links out on SEO Preps, JJ Heddle. I think that could be a great response, great email that I received late in the week there. So, fans, stay with us. On the other side of the break, I will explain how River's Edge threw the league a little curveball that possibly went a long way in determining the final standings for both team and individuals. Matt, as we turn our attention to golf, we take ourselves to the back nine at River's Edge. And as I said, throwing us a little bit of a curveball in several years past, whenever the golf league takes the SVC match to River's Edge, which, you know, obviously used to be running Fox in these years that I'm talking about, they would play the front nine. And in playing the front nine, you'd always get some of your lowest scores from top to bottom all the way through. And that's why I really thought it was a must play well week, as I said on last week's show. Well, what we come to find out is they end up playing the back nine. And Matt, you could probably comment real quick before I get into my main point here. Just for people who golf, I have always said they have some really tough, legitimate par threes on both sides out there. But overall, wouldn't you agree that the back nine is probably 3 to 4 shots tougher?
Easily. You've got 3 holes basically that are pretty tight toward the back of the golf course. One being a par 5, one being a par 4 that's just as long as the par 5. You've got a 240 or 250 yard par 3 in that on that side. You've got a tough ending hole as a par 3, probably 185. So yeah, it's easily that many shots tougher.
Well, Matt, the reason I bring that up is, you know, we're now ready to take on Crown Hill this upcoming week, and then JC's, and then an 18-hole, which counts as the 7th and 8th, the front side, back side at Pickaway Country Club. And I'm just looking at the individuals and some of the stats that you've done for us there at the bottom of our golf page, and we only have four players at this point better than 40. And they're the four you expect. Is if you caught our SVC golf preview earlier in the year, you saw the pictures of Forkham and Calvin from Uniota, and then McKee from Southeastern, and Thompson of Paint Valley. And then I think even maybe Cooper's right at 40 from Edina. But those four guys are the only ones under 40. And we really have a long list that stretches down to bogey golf being all league. And I guess my take is I'm just going on my experience of playing these golf courses myself. If those are the scores at this point, you really have to look at outside of your four or five elite golfers in the league. I really think coaches would have to be pretty happy with 43, 44, 45, 46 coming in from several people. I also want to make sure people understand the scoring rule. If you play in all the matches, you drop your lowest score, but you have to at least play in seven to be all league. I noticed Caleb Cushing withdrew the other night. I tried to get a little update on that. Someone said it was a back issue. I never have been able to confirm that. But that's kind of become scary because you start to get a guy who's obviously a lock to be all league, but now he's in a situation where he has to at least be able to physically go out and finish the rounds the rest of the way out. Matt, you spend a lot of time looking at this. I wanted to get your thoughts on a couple things. One, just your take on the overall scoring to this point and how you think it could continue to drop in terms of the scores getting a lot higher. And then also, now that Zane Trace and Westfall really take advantage the other night of the tougher nine at River's Edge, you really got to like your pick of Westfall playing at home this week to maybe really take a lock on that second place in the league standings.
Yeah, I mean, Westfall definitely has the advantage from that standpoint, playing at home this week. And like I talked about before, I think their golf course prepares them a little bit for some of the other golf courses that might be a little bit tighter or whatever. But, you know, the scoring as a whole, it seems like, isn't quite as good as what we've become accustomed to the last couple years maybe. You know, but there's still some interesting things. There's a couple really good freshmen that make this list, it looks like, which is always interesting. There's some good young players. And then you've got your people like Forkham at the top who you've become accustomed to seeing up there. But you mentioned that the interesting thing is these all-league standings could change a lot because there are some people as high as 6, 7, 8 that have a pretty bad score on there that they've been able to drop to this point. And what happens is if they go out and, like you said, they get sick and can't go to a match or they shoot worse than that one match, or the same, then all of a sudden they got to count that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that shoots that average way up. So when you're dropping that score, things can change drastically week to week. That's for sure.
Well, Matt, you make an interesting point of some of the freshmen, because I think what happens is just like teams and programs have to sometimes rebuild, I think leagues go through that. And
right.
I think we're seeing that this year with a lot of really, really talented golfers graduating. Some of these freshmen, sophomores, I think as they get a little bigger and stronger and as they start to get more experience, you're going to see scores improve over the next couple of years. And speaking of graduating stars and kind of looking to rebuild, I guess cross country's done that a little bit. Cross country is another sport that we cover there. Again, on the left side of our homepage, just click on the cross country icon. But I noticed with cross country, Uniota boys still very good. Zane Trace girls still really good. But even then, you'll see some different names. Gone Adrian Ross and Taylor Hatfield and Daniel Gardner from Paint Valley. And you're looking for different names. We're about a month away now. I believe it's October 13th, and I'm pretty sure that's at Piketon for our SVC meet. And, you know, we mentioned this last year in our track talk a little bit in the spring. The running sports seem to be a little bit unique in terms of you don't see a lot of the teams run against each other. A lot of times they might meet at an invite or a different thing, but very rarely do you get a large number all in the same race. Even when they go to certain meets, sometimes they're in a big school, small school divide. So I just think it's going to be interesting to follow that a little bit more. every time we get those results, we try to pass them on to you on that page. But obviously, we'll talk a lot of cross country as we get closer to that October 13th date. So, fans, on the other side of the break, we will turn our attention to volleyball. This past week told us a lot, and I will now tell you what I think it all means. Well, Matt, I'll tell you, volleyball is really an interesting thing to talk about this week. I encourage fans to go check out the Good Health Chiropractic Center SVC volleyball scoreboard and make sure you pay attention there on the scoreboard. You'll see links for junior high, junior varsity, and our archives. It'll take you back through every score of every match throughout the year. And Matt, I had a chance to watch Uniota play a couple times this week, and they ended up dropping a couple matches that really was going to hurt them probably in the standings a little bit. But the Uniota team's an interesting group. You've heard me talk about in the preview a lot of sophomores, sophomores, juniors, no senior on the roster at all, I believe. I know in the back, Libro, Emily Ward does a nice job with serve receiving digs, and then Alexis Overly's an all-around talent. And then White and Neff and Taylor Overly and Steinbrook, you know, they all have a skill that they bring to the table. And I guess the way I would describe this Uniota team after watching them a couple times is it's a roller coaster of sorts. If you think of your favorite roller coaster, you get in certain situations where sometimes they play on such a low and they look like they're not inspired at all. But then what you love about young kids is they're resilient. Like, I think they took Zane Trace 4 the other night in the second set. They won 25-16. They played with such energy and such passion, but overall, I just think that's the sign of the young team and a little bit of the growing pains. Another question I was asked a couple different times, once in email this week, once in a couple different conversations, people will stop me and say, "Hey, you've seen Zane Trace play." And I'll be, yeah, a couple times. And they'll say, are they for real? You know, Zane Trace is still the only undefeated team there at the top. And, you know, this is a team that won at Westfall, won at Uniota. And my response is absolutely, they're for real. This is a very balanced team. They do have to go to Huntington Tuesday night. It's going to be a challenge. But this is a team, a really balanced attack led by Haley Carl. Haley Carl is one of the really improved talents in this year's league. And I say that about a kid who's already all SVC as a freshman sophomore. But she's really taken her game to a new level. Outstanding leadership skills I noticed the other night at Uniota that impressed me. Tillison Pontius and the 6-2 offense there set, and Strasball, Svetnagel, Chafe, and join Carl to make such a balanced attack. So, yeah, this is a very good volleyball team, and I definitely think they're going to be right there to challenge Westfall, Huntington, and Edina. And Matt, one thing I wanted to get your comment on, going back to what I was talking about Uniota and then talking about the improved leadership I see with Zane Trace, I want to talk about chemistry. It's important in all sports, in my opinion. I think in volleyball more so than anything. From a coach's perspective or even a fan's perspective, how important is chemistry? And would you say that it's impossible to reach your full potential without it?
I think it is at the high school level impossible to be as good as you can be without it. You may find some cases where teams are still pretty good, but you're dealing with teenage kids. And from what some of my buddies who have teenage girls tell me, it's even more so with them. You know what I mean? You have to feel that camaraderie, that togetherness, I think, when you're playing a sport, where you know, where you have that relationship off the field or court or whatever the case may be, to where you feel like you're in something a little bit bigger than just playing a game, you know, because when you get to that point where you feel like, you know, if I don't do well, I'm letting my friend down, then all of a sudden that's more of a motivator than if I don't do well, I'm just letting my teammate down.
Sure.
When that, you know, and I think that's the key. You know, I think like in professional sports and stuff, it's not as big a deal. It's important, but you know, those guys are professionals. They know they have a job to do. They're doing it. At the high school level, though, we're talking about kids, and teams with good chemistry can overcome a lot of things. They don't give up as easy. They don't quit on each other as easy. They don't blame each other as much. They point the finger. So I think it's real, real important.
Well, Matt, I know from looking through our scoreboard, there's been some stats that have just been incredible to look at. I know Jackie Kella of Huntington's been over 30 kills twice this year already. Emily Dresbach at Southeastern putting up a high total in terms of aces. Kayla Tackett at Westfall, incredible effort in the back row with Diggs. I wanted to let fans know our Adena Sports Medicine for football and volleyball. Fans listening, Adena Sports Medicine reminds us that listening to your coach is one thing. Listening to your pain is everything. Request an appointment with Adena Sports Medicine online at adena.org or call 740-779-4598. So I appreciate their support. And Matt, I know you do a lot of the stat work here. Right. As we look at football, volleyball, what are our plans here? I know we're in the process of getting some coaches.
Right. I'd like to have volleyball up by, you know, we do this show on Monday, so most people will be listening to it, you know, Tuesday or later. But, you know, if coaches are listening, get me your stats as quick as possible. I've got a few that I've got in already, but I'd really like to have volleyball up. Usually the way we're going to do it is Thursday is going to be our volleyball day where the stats, you know, are updated. And Friday morning seems like it's good for football. You know, we get those out there as people kind of get excited about football Friday night and they get on there and check it out. But we need as many coaches as possible to get those in. We've always had pretty good cooperation from the coaches. There's a few that decide not to do it. That's their choice. But we need as many as we can so that we can recognize these kids. And like I said, we'll be getting volleyball out on Thursday. Football will be Friday.
Well, Matt, you mentioned football a second ago, and that's where I want to go with the show next. If you look at our C&K Athletic Equipment, they're the sponsor of our two-minute drill. The past couple of weeks, we have taken some rapid-fire questions. This week, we will look at some bold predictions in terms of winners and individual players to watch in Week 4, which is obviously the opening of SVC Football 2012.
Adena at Huntington.
You know, it's an interesting game. I know last couple of years on paper, you'd think, okay, this is a no-brainer. I think it becomes a little more interesting this year. I know, I think most people would agree Adena is still a good football team, but they're not quite what they have been in terms of some of the people they've graduated. If I remember correctly, Huntington put 21 points on the board in the first half against them last year on the road. And I think Huntington's a little bit better this year with some experience back. So this could be closer than what some people think. I'll still have to give the edge to Adena until Huntington gets over that hump and proves they can do it in league play. But this could be interesting.
Well, Matt, I can't disagree in a way. I mean, if Adena does prove to be too much up front and run the football, it could get away from Huntington. But I'm going to tell you what, I'm not going to excuse myself all the way to a middle seat in the Huntington bandwagon yet, but I think I'm going to take just a back corner seat in case I need to jump off here in a week or two. But I just think with Vickers, Dyer, Cheney and company, I really think Huntington just simply outscores the Warriors. I'm going to take Huntington at home to win their third straight.
Zane Trace at Pink Valley.
Yeah, interesting game from this standpoint here. I mean, Paint Valley plays a half last week. So, you know, how will they react to that? I don't know if that hurts them, helps them, or if it matters at all. But Zane Trace is interesting to me. They played a really difficult non-league schedule. They end up knocking off a Greenfield team that had already beaten a couple SVC squads coming into last week. You know, I think Zane Trace's record's deceiving because of who they've played. Paint Valley's played well, too, but I think I'll go with Zane Trace in a close one.
Well, Matt, I guess in terms of the final prediction, we disagree again, but the funny thing of it is I agree with everything you said. I mean, when I look at this on paper, Zane Trace's run game is pretty good. The kicking game's outstanding. I guess I just have a feeling. I mean, maybe it's my Paint Valley bias. I'm not sure. I think there's a feeling that's back at Paint Valley in football and then playing at home and coming into league play. I think this game's going to be extremely competitive. I think it could come all the way down to the final minutes. And I think Paint Valley will figure out a way to win a game that could be maybe as few as 1 or 2 points.
Southeastern at Uniodo.
Well, I'm going to go with Uniodo in this one. I think the Shermans got them a pretty good win last week, against Alexander, an Alexander team that had beaten them in the past and an Alexander team that had that has had some success over the past few years. I think that Uniodo is getting it together a little bit. I'll give them the nod at home in this one.
Well, Matt, we agree here. Now, I know talking with Coach Coy in terms of their first 2 weeks, I expect Southeastern to continue to do what they've been doing, which is to start fast. I think this will be a competitive game through the first couple quarters. I think as you get into the second quarter, I think the depth of the just simple numbers on the Uniota roster with Southeastern, so many kids going both ways, I think Uniota wears them down, the run game. Keep an eye on both kickers in this game, Dylan Miles and Drew Davis, but I think in the end, Uniota's just too much.
Westfall at Piketon.
Well, this ought to be a fun one. I can't imagine the fans not getting their money's worth on this one. You know, this game obviously could go either way. I've seen Piketon play personally. I like some of the things I saw from them up front with their skill guys. I know Westfall has the same thing going for them. You know, I think either way here, it's a little bit of a crapshoot, but I'm going to go with Piketon at home in this one to get over the hump and beat Westfall.
Well, Matt, I think you called it really, really well when you used the word fun. I mean, as a fan who's not necessarily rooting either way, to get a chance to just go down and watch these two offenses go to work is going to be fun. You love all the weapons. I think it's going to be crucial for Piketon to figure out a way to make Williamson one-dimensional. I know you said you really like some athletes up front for Piketon, and maybe they'll be able to do that. But I tell you what, I learned my lesson 2 weeks ago, and it was confirmed this past week again. I'm not going to bet against Trent Williamson. I think this kid's big time, and I think in the end he figures out a way to get his Mustangs a win down at Piketon. Fans, Matt and I always enjoy hearing from you, and we truly mean it when we say we're sorry. As we said earlier, we can't get to all of them, and I want to reiterate that there's an incredible email again that I think is going to make for some fun discussion. Let us know on SEO Preps, on JJ Huddle, on email, Facebook, Twitter. Let us know what you think in each sport is that unique thing that doesn't jump out at people, but when you really break it down is so, so crucial to winning or losing in that particular sport. And Matt, I talked about the inbox admin one at svcsportzone.com. We always try to jump out or pull one more out toward the end of the show. I think we have time this week. Do you see one there that jumps out at you as one that would be worthy of talking about here at the end?
Well, here's one that's kind of interesting. I know you guys do a good job of not talking about individual kids on touchy topics, but I'd really like to get your opinion on kids transferring from one school to another. It has really played a role in the SVC in several circumstances. I think it'd be a great show topic to hear from some fans, coaches, and even some players. Appreciate all you do for SVC sports. Look forward to hopefully hearing some more on this topic on your podcast show.
Well, Matt, it's kind of funny that you pulled that one out because this is a topic that's really come up all the way back to the late summer when we were asking for suggestions for show topics, and we'd flirted with the idea, and more things have come in. I do think it's something that is relevant. I think it's something that's there. I definitely think it's something that you get kids moving in and out of SVC schools. I think when you get kids that go from school to school within the conference, it's kind of like that two-shot swing in golf. You know what I mean? It takes a great player off the one team, which obviously hurts small schools, but then it puts a great player on another team, which is kind of gives them a little boost. So I think it's an interesting topic. I think it's something that we could definitely visit and maybe really educate fans on different rules that are out there and what the OHSAA is trying to do to cut this down a little bit. What's your overall take, Matt, as we get close to the end of the show this week?
Well, we could definitely do a whole show on this, I think, with the way it's going on. It's something that, unfortunately, you know, is a part of our sports society right now. And, you know, I guess everyone has a different opinion on if it's good or bad. I've always liked it when kids get together at young ages in their community and they build their programs together, you know, rather than just jumping around or having somebody come in and save the day, so to speak. But, you know, it is what it is. And I think probably the thing that, again, we get into a lot of different angles on this, but the thing that's probably the toughest is that it's very hard to enforce the rules in some circumstances because the OHSA basically doesn't have the manpower to investigate every situation, so they leave it up to the individual schools to police themselves. And sometimes that doesn't happen. I actually heard Terry Eldridge, I believe, talking about this a little bit on the Scoreboard show the other night. I don't know if you caught that or not.
Yes.
But she was talking about how, you know, you literally have to get in a car sometimes and drive out and see, are people really living in this trailer that they're renting? Or is it just, they're just getting mail there and, you know, saying they live there so their kid can go to school in that district. But some schools don't police themselves, you know, and that's what it comes down to. So we could really, this might be something we want to talk about more when we have more time, you know, in the future.
Well, absolutely. And we want fans to get involved. Again, that's admin1@svcsportszone.com, or have your voice heard on the show, 740-569-3254. Simply wait for the beep and leave your comment question on there, and we'll get you involved in the show. So with all those things, make sure you're getting involved. And so until next time, for the great people at Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for DBK Media Services, and for my co-host Matt Combs, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportzone.com, where we are 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by svcsportzone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit svcsportszone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.